Today, we're going to finish up our series on the Climate Science Olympics, as I'm calling it, focusing on the fourth National Climate Assessment, Volume 2. The four-year report, which gathers multiple scientists across multiple fields together to present climate science from multiple angles, focusing both on causal factors and potential impacts. The last show was on the first half of the report, which primarily focused on the environment. This show focuses on the second half of the report, which is more focused on its effect on communities and regions.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome back to another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind it's worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc., a black activist advocacy and think tank with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for black people in America through education, a culture shift in economics. As always, you should go to www.pactsinc.org. That's PAXinc.org to check them out. Check out the Learning Center. Check out the books, new books added, new chapters added almost daily. Check out the surveys, take one, get involved, become a member, donate, talk to your friend, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend that if he don't tell a friend, then you're going to fight a friend, namely him. And let's make it do what it do. Do whatever you can to support them because they are doing whatever they can to support you. And without further ado, we're going to get into the second half of the National Climate Assessment on YouTube. So we're going to open the doors right off the bat talking about human health. Now, a lot of these sections are essentially going to be rehashes of the sections that I covered in yesterday's shows, just with a focus on the human impacts. So I'm going to condense them a little bit, but you should definitely go and check out the report. There will be a link to it in this show, just like there was a link to it in the last show. If you go to www.freedomtrainradio.com, click on the Lessons from the Screen show, you'll see it right there. Or you could click on the Lessons from the Screen and then go into the Documents tab, and you'll see all of the documents that we've reviewed. Just like if you go into the Documentaries tab, you'll see all the documentaries. And if you go into the Current Events tab, you'll see all of the current events. So check the report out. At the end of the report, there is a question and answer there, a frequently asked question there. And most of the questions that I hear being brought up during climate change conversations are questions that are answered in that section. So you can get it, have it on paper the next time you decide to argue with friends, whatever your position is. Talking about climate change or global warming. Of course, they started calling it climate change because global warming was misleading to a lot of people. They kept saying, well, why ain't it getting hotter? So they said, well, if people are getting confused, or they, and I don't think people were getting confused. I think people just wanted to be silly. So they were like, you know what? We're just not going to call it global warming. We're going to call it climate change. So sometimes I'll still say global warming. If I do, I mean climate change. You know what I mean. Let's not get cute. Anyways, moving forward, human health. So the bottom line here is exactly what we spent most of the show yesterday talking about. Human health will be affected. Now, in the last show, I talked about air pollution, water degradation, and soil degradation. But it's going to be a lot worse than it being too hot or too cold or too wet or too dry. Temperature swings and weather exposure are bad enough when you're healthy and when you're up for it. But imagine how bad it is when you have asthma or heart disease or both from air pollution. You know, imagine how bad it is when you have malnutrition from food grown in dead soil, or you don't have any food because the soil won't grow it. All kinds of digestive issues from consuming bad things, infections, various other things. So all of these things are on the table. And so imagine how bad it is to have to experience 110, 115, 120 degree heat wave or a negative 40 or negative 50 degree bout when you're malnourished, when you're sick, and when you're carrying an infection. It's going to be a whole lot worse. So that's the thing we got to keep in mind. It's not just going to be temperatures and rain. You're going to be dealing with things that you could barely deal with when you're healthy. But in this case, you're not going to be healthy. And of course, this is going to have a negative impact on the children and the elderly and the poor a lot worse than it is on people that are healthy and people that have money. Duh. But the report goes, and in almost every section, the report not only talks about the bad things, but it tries to talk about what's going on to make things better because people are doing things. But the report talks about proactive steps to creating adaptable policies and programs. And, you know, we need to be thinking ahead to how things could go and how we can negate that. You see, we can account for climate if we begin planning early enough, but we need to take advantage of the time we have. And this means not only developing adaptive approaches to healthcare, but it also means adapting adaptive approaches to reducing emissions, which will have the long-term effect of improving healthcare options by reducing the speed of climate change. And since we love talking about money, that's hundreds of billions of dollars saved in healthcare and infrastructure costs. The less we do now, the more we'll pay for it later in terms of all resources, including cash and human lives. Now, the next section focuses on tribes and indigenous peoples, and it's basically a rehash of what I just went over for human health, because tribes and indigenous people are humans. But if I can be blunt here, allow me to be blunt for a moment and just say this. Indigenous people are fucked. They just are. You see, there are several indigenous tribes that are right now fighting back against climate change, and they are using all the tools available to them to try to do it, including asserting private property rights or property rights to prevent development. And this makes sense because they are the ones that are experiencing the now effects of climate change, as their lives are so connected to the environments they live in. Our lives, as typical Americans, we're largely insulated from the climate. When it's cold or hot, we come inside and turn on the AC. Whether or not food is scarce, we can still go to the store and buy whatever we need. Doesn't matter what, you know, what's going on with the weather, we can get in our cars and drive to wherever we want to go. We're largely not impacted too much by climate. Indigenous people don't have that luxury. They don't have that benefit. And some people would argue that that's not a luxury or benefit at all, but you get what I mean. So it makes sense that they would be fighting back. They would be on the front lines. But the fact is, and again, this isn't in the report. This is just me talking. Because the report simply says they will be devastated if we don't help them fight back. I'm saying we don't really care about indigenous people. If Americans have to choose between driving to work and killing off an entire indigenous family, or an entire indigenous tribe, that tribe won't even make it into the history books. Now, I do applaud the scientists in the report for trying to make a case for even having a section on indigenous people, but let's be real. Americans don't care. Americans don't even care about other Americans. So when it comes to the tribes, we have already been limiting their access to their traditional territories so that we can develop them. We've already restricted their access to American social systems, and we have been doing our best to convert them to our lifestyle without overtly forcing them. But that's a show for another day. So the next section focuses on climate effects on U.S. international interests. So when it comes to economics and trade, climate change is going to affect trade. Another duh statement. Now, the report specifically mentions imports and exports, especially those things that have to cross the ocean to get here. Trade prices go up. Cost at the register prices will grow up. Resource availability becomes another talking point when we talk about trade, especially ocean trade. Basically, unless we do something, climate change is going to make everything more expensive. Now, international development and humanitarian assistance is also going to be affected. One bad storm can undo decades of aid and assistance to a region. And with the weather becoming more unstable and more powerful, more resources will be sent to repair damage than develop, you know, than to develop what's there. And one has to wonder how long people will be willing to send aid to foreign nations as we struggle here at home. I mean, we see how people were reacting to Puerto Rico, and that's a U.S. territory. Like, we see the way regular everyday citizens act when it comes to sending money to people that they don't believe are Americans, that are actually American people. So when it comes to sending money to people who are another country away or another whatever away, you know, if we don't even want to send Puerto Rico aid, if we don't even want to help out, you know, places like the U.S. Caribbean islands and other places like that, then what makes us, you know, so just, I don't know, it gets interesting. But again, all of these are interesting points of conversation. That's why I'm bringing them up. Not just that they're in the report, because they are, but also because they are interesting points of conversation. Now, the next point that I'm going to mention here is national security. One of the top investors in climate science is the military, because they understand the importance of weather when it comes to security. Again, one bad storm can change the whole landscape. The show I did on weather forecasting talked about the U.S. military being one of the pioneers in weather forecasting for the purpose of naval and beach-based planning and exercises. Can't forget about the naval exercises. But if the rest of us don't get on board, we will face a situation where the military can't help us and local law enforcement can't maintain order. And as social order breaks down in other nations, you have to ask how much longer before we deal with some sort of military situation here? How much longer before social order breaks down here? And how will we maintain, if they break down here, any event of runaway climate change, having to deal with the social issues and climate change? Trump likes to say, if we don't have a border, we don't have a country. Well, if we don't have a stable climate, we don't have a habitable planet. And it's going to be exceedingly difficult to make America great when people are sick and can't go outside because they're scared of the next big storm or because the air might kill them. So when it comes to national security, the security of the human species, not just America, is at risk when we're talking about climate change. We got to remember, humans can only exist in a very narrow strip of temperature ranges with a very narrow approximation of chemicals and other things in the air and in our environments. And when things become unbalanced, we're not a very hardy species. We die quickly. And I think because we're humans, it's easy for us to forget how fragile life is and how violent the universe is. We should be taking care to do everything that we can to protect and to provide some security for our species on this little blue bubble while we can. And not, to me, it doesn't even seem like it would make sense to question something like this. Like, why wouldn't you want to be a good steward of your planet? Why wouldn't you want to make sure that even if there is the slightest, remotest possibility that what we're doing could be assisting in our own destruction, why wouldn't you want to negate that? And it doesn't seem like there's anybody with anything to gain from it. I know I'm off on a tangent right now, but just bear with me. Because I've, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, the scientists just want money. The scientists are getting money because their science is viewed as credible by the people that are providing them with the money, the U.S. military, the people that you love to talk about how honest and important they are. They care. The government has up until recently cared. And even if you don't care, what harm is there in not producing carbon dioxide and flooding the atmosphere with it? And I know again, I'm off topic, but just bear with me, because the logic is broken. And here, we can't just pick and choose which components of science we want to agree with. We can't say on one hand that they're right when they say this, and then they take that exact same model, that exact same logic, that exact same science, and apply it over here, and we say that they're wrong. If we know that carbon dioxide is poison, is deadly gas, it acidifies the water, it causes problems, you can't breathe too much of it in, you can't have too much of it in your system, that's why you breathe it out instead of just holding it in. If we understand all these things, then why is it so difficult to understand that pumping large amounts of it into the atmosphere is also a bad thing? You know, if we understand that certain components will kill us as humans if we get them into our bodies in directly large amounts, why do we think it's a good idea to pump them into the atmosphere that we exist in large quantities? You know, that's like, it's almost like deciding you want to live in fire. Like, you know that fire will kill you if it gets on you, so you keep it off of you. But the analogy here, and it might be broken, but I'm just bear with me. But the analogy here is, okay, I know fire will kill me if it touches me, but as long as it doesn't touch me, I'm safe. So I'm going to move into a burning house. And as long as I keep from touching the fire, I should be able to live there forever. It's broken. Anyways, national security is the piece of the report they touched on there. And it is a critical component especially for everybody that's America First. If you believe in national security, then you know that we got to do something to stabilize the weather, because erratic weather is catastrophic for national security. Planes, boats, you know, personnel. So the next section focuses on social interactions, multiple stressors, and complex systems. And basically it says everything is connected. If one goes, others can be subbed in if we plan accordingly. Otherwise, if one goes, all go. It's a pretty simple concept because everything is connected. And the example given in the report focuses on there being a drought and using river management to provide fresh water. A river management can also be used to provide electricity and transportation. So the difficulty here is in how separated and specialized everything and everyone has become. And again, this is me talking. We need a culture shift. It's been said for decades now, and I'm going to say it again. Everything, including education, is too specialized. It's too stratified. It's too segregated. And this is how you can have people that have a PhD in business but can't tell you the basic principles of economics. And I have met them. Or how you can have someone that is a chemistry specialist but can't boil an egg to feed themselves. I have met them too. Specialization does have its uses. I'm not anti-specialization, but we have taken it to a whole nother level. You know, like, this is one of those cases where being specialized goes wrong. Things need to start connecting again. And that isn't just for the sake of the climate, but also for the sake of civilization. People need to know enough about things outside of their specialty to understand how things are connected to their specialty. And this would, in my opinion, give them a more holistic view and approach to their specialty and how they can pursue certain endeavors that they're aiming to pursue without destroying something else. From this point forward, the report moves into the various regions of the country, starting with the Northeast. Now, for the Northeast, one word, seasons. Now, for those of us in the South, we know that one of the first things you hear when you talk to people about living up north is about how wonderful it is to have all the seasons. I don't want to go down south. I like seasons. I like fall and spring. You know, in the south, we pretty much have wet and dry seasons. It's like we on the African Serengeti or something like that. You know, we don't necessarily have a winter per se. We got a time of the year where it's not as hot as it is the other times of the year. But for the most part, we got a rainy season and a dry season. So rain is our winter and dry is our summer, although we do occasionally get those summer storms. And of course, the really bad storms show up in the summer. But for the most part, the summer is sunny, dry, and hot in the South. At least it was where I grew up. So that's a major part. Seasons is a major part of the appeal for tourism and a major necessity for the rural and agricultural areas in the Northeast. Now, on the surface, warmer winters might not seem like a bad thing for us, unless you're one of those utterly crazy people that like the cold. And to people that tell me that they like the winter and they like the cold and they like to be cold, and then they turn around and walk outside and in a short sleeve T-shirt and some shorts and anything less than 50 degree weather, these people are psychopaths. They're a danger to all of us. They are a threat to our culture, to our existence, to our state of being. These people, these are dangerous individuals. I'm not scared of MS-13. I'm not scared of Bloods. I'm not scared of Crips. I'm not even scared of 5%ers and the biker gangs. I'm not scared of the KKK, the white supremacy, none of that. But somebody walking outside in 25, 30 degree weather with denim, you know, with denim shirt, a denim shorts on, jean shorts on, and a wife beater, that person terrifies me. I am terrified of you because there is something clearly wrong with you. But anyways, for most of us normal, sane people, warmer winters are not really a bad thing, but the implications are deep and they are already being felt in some ways in some of the more sensitive places. And that's because plants require, especially agricultural crops, require a very specific temperature range to grow appropriately. And if you muck that up, you start playing around with the crop cycles. Coastal changes is also something that the Northeast has to contend with, along with every region that has a coast. Water issues, which have been mentioned in the last show, sea level rise, warmer waters, changing the habitat, acidification, more on and on and on. And while everybody depends on the coast to some extent, the people living there are definitely going to feel it first. And the Northeast is also particularly important in America as an economic and cultural hub, housing several significant monuments, several key historical places are in the Northeast. The government largely operates in that region. I know people like to say Washington, D.C. is the South, but to me, anything north of North Carolina, it's not South. I know people are going to argue about that, especially because we got Virginia, and I'll accept Virginia, and I'll accept West Virginia, but definitely not. You know, I don't know. I don't view it like I've been to D.C. That's not a southern place. Anyways, so that's what we do. Now, the Southeast, well, the South is probably one of the most at-risk areas in the country when it comes to vulnerability to climate change. The South seems to be the most vulnerable region on the mainland anyways. You know, and that's, you know, finally, first is something besides football and being crazy as hell. So way to go, South. The area is already temperate and conducive to pathogens and the bugs that carry them nearly year-round. But a lot of the centers of the South are situated on the water or close to it. And these regions aren't too developed to begin with, especially with regards to climate change and rising tides. I mean, we're practically flooding Louisiana ourselves with all of the digging that we're doing in the bayous and things of that nature. And let's not forget the levees that is still in need of repair and overhaul in certain areas. Never forget Katrina. You know, so the South is not in a position to deal with climate change. And what's ironic about that is a good chunk of the climate change deniers seem to be in the South. Well, a good chunk of the Southerners I've met anyways are climate change deniers. And I live in the South, and I've been in the South all my life, with the exception of a few trips up north for business and other things. So the South is in trouble. Definitely got work to do. That the whole southern region needs to be developed, especially with regards to dealing with storms, dealing with storm surge, dealing with runoff, dealing with water issues, dealing with coastal issues, sea level rise. We got to do better about this. Now, the U.S. Caribbean is up next, and the Caribbean is in a different section from the Hawaiian Islands, but I'm going to lump them all together, because they largely have very similar issues. But I'm gonna talk about it in reference to the Caribbean. See, the Caribbean is facing obvious and expensive problems. Sea level rise is the first on the list, considering the Caribbean and the Hawaiian Islands are a collection of islands. But going underwater isn't the biggest problem, it's just the most obvious one. A larger problem that I believe, and it is listed in the report, is the degradation of water quality. With the increasing sea level and the natural freshwater aquifers that we talked about running shallow or running low because of droughts and various other problems that they might be having, or even being brought closer to the surface because of increased rain, there's a potential for these freshwater aquifers to be contaminated with ocean water, requiring more money to be spent to clean and remove the salt and other substances from the water. Now, the dependency on the ocean ecosystems are another problem when you consider the fact that the ocean is becoming inhospitable to the life that is developed there. And all island places also face huge challenges to tourism, which could cause economic stress. And that's to say nothing about the potential loss of culture and history that would happen if we lost the Caribbean or the Hawaiian Islands. So the Midwest is the agricultural production center of America. I don't think anything more needs to be said about the importance of the area in terms of food and the sensitivity of the area in terms of climate change. You can add in other topics that we've already talked about on the last show and earlier in this show, invasive species, soil degradation, water, and you have a real problem. Now, also, some of the most talked about disadvantaged communities in America exist in the Midwest. And if they are struggling now, imagine how bad it's going to be in runaway climate change. Now, the Midwest also contains the Great Lakes, which produce a substantial portion of America's fresh water. If that water gets contaminated, gets acidified, gets whatever, we're going to be facing a serious water crisis. Not to mention a serious pathogen crisis if it gets contaminated with something that can pass through the filter, of course. Now, it has the Great Plains separated into the Northern and Southern Great Plains. I'm just going to lump them all in together. The Northern Great Plains are Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Wyoming. The rest of the Great Plains are the rest of the Great Plains. So this area, however, the Great Plains produces a considerable amount of energy for the nation, especially when you consider the population. And a good chunk of that is renewable energy. This region also produces agriculture, recreation, and tourism are big draws to the region for various outdoorsy type people. And the region contains a large amount of biodiversity. There's a large amount of diversity in the living species in the Great Plains. All of that is in jeopardy, not to mention the Native American tribes living in the region. So when you're talking about destruction to the Great Plains, You're not just talking about loss of human lives and things of that nature, but you're talking about a decrease in the quality of life that's available for everybody else everywhere in the country. Now, following the Great Plains, they follow up with the West. They break this up into the Northwest and the Southwest. And I'm going to lump them in together because they essentially have the same issues. Essentially, every place in the country has the same issue. But it's broken out. There are minor differences. So if you're interested in the differences and more of the more in-depth reading of the differences, you should definitely go and check out the report. But as far as the West goes, the West is already experiencing a lot of the effects of climate change. And the area, the West Coast, is a huge producer of renewable energy, food, culture, and heritage. And this area has a significant number of frontline fighters along with the Great Plains. People and frontline fighters are indigenous peoples that are fighting directly against climate change affecting their lives. It's not passive. They're right out front trying to do something about it. But, you know, like in all areas, they need support. But the West Coast is largely dealing with the effects of climate change. The fires that I talked about in the last show that they've been dealing with, that now they deal with seemingly every summer. Those fires are worsened by climate change. And there are various other situations going on. There's been a drought in various places all over the South, Southwest, that you know, climate change. So they're directly dealing with the effects of it right now, and the effects are going to get worse. So Alaska is actually dealing with a combination of everything that everybody else is dealing with, including things that other areas aren't having to deal with, like permafrost. So, Alaska. Yeah. So in the final two sections, one is reducing risk through adaptation. So in this section, pretty much zeroes in on what's been said throughout the entire report. We need to adapt faster. We need to move quicker in finding and implementing solutions. And it's not that people aren't doing anything. It's just that what is being done isn't keeping pace with the effects of climate change. And that's probably because it seems like to me we're only going one way. A lot of the things that I've been reading about over the past few weeks, past few months, past few years are aimed at lowering carbon emissions in the future. But that enough doesn't seem to be getting done right now in order to make a change in the reckless culture that has been developed. We need immediate and, in my opinion, drastic changes to happen right now in conjunction with the long-term future plans. And this isn't a future-only problem. It's a right-now problem as well. So we have to address it with right-now solutions. That means, you know, in my opinion, like one of the things I've started doing here is if there is any place I need to go within a mile of my house, I walk. Unless it's extreme, you know, adverse weather or something of that nature, or it's an emergency, then I'll hop in the car. But I'm not hopping in my car to go any place within a mile of my house. I can walk to the grocery store, get my book bag, walk. I can walk to the convenience store. You know, I can walk to the community center. You know, I can walk. Most of the places I need to go, I can walk. And if it's a one-way trip, meaning, you know, I'm going to get brought back or something like that, if it's within 2 or 3 miles of the house, I might still walk. So, you know, and that's just something that I'm trying to do to alleviate the problems. Recycling, taking the extra step to not just throw things away, but to rinse them out and make sure that you're recycling appropriately. That's something that my wife is real big about. So, and these are little things, but if everybody does them, they add up. But they're right now things. They're not like, we can't gradually do this. This is something where you make a long-term plan, but you also need a short-term immediate impact. And so people need to do something right now. Simply saying, I'm going to work towards something in the future, it isn't enough. Now, obviously, we'd rather you do that than do nothing at all. But it's not enough to say, well, I'm going to start here and work my way up to there. No, we need everyone to start, like, not at the beginning, whereas you're saying, well, I'm gonna walk, you know, if I got to be somewhere on Sunday between 3 and 4, I'm going to walk there, and then I'll just build up, and eventually I'll cover the whole week after 6 years. No, we don't need that. You know, we need you to be at least meet somewhere in the middle where you'll say, okay, well, if it's inside of this range and it's inside of these 3 or 4 days, at least, like, we need something drastic because we're facing a drastic situation. We can't head off a drastic situation with minimal solutions, minimal starts. We have to start somewhere at least moderately drastic, at least. So, and I understand you start where you can. We'd rather you start than just not do anything at all. But I think the severity of what we're facing has not been imparted. And so the solutions that people are choosing to step, you know, the willingness to accept any sort of minimal solution as a starting point, I think at this point has worked to our disadvantage, because we also know how things start more than likely isn't how they're going to finish. And people oftentimes go backwards in time. So they start with something minimal, meaning to do well, and then eventually they just stop doing it altogether. Well, maybe if they started with something drastic, then eventually they cut back to something minimal. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking, but we need people doing things more drastic. Our parents and our grandparents ate up all of that time that we had to figure this thing out and take, you know, these minimal steps. Our parents and grandparents ate all that up. They basically relaxed on our dime, passing their debt to us. And we can't implement gradual 10 or 20 year plans without immediate action unless we're willing to pass on a more dire situation down to our children, who will have to, you know, they're going to have to pay the environmental debt for the last 5 generations, roughly, that came before them. So in the last section, the report talks about reducing risk through emissions mitigation. Now, obviously, a major point of the modern climate change discussion is to reduce emissions and to remove current greenhouse gases from the atmosphere as quickly as possible. If we implement emissions mitigation strategies in conjunction with adaptation practices right now, my generation would actually live to see the benefits of our change in lifestyle. And again, I'm going to say this again one more time. Even if climate change is a hoax, being a good steward to our planet should be something that we all strive for. So with that, that's been this. I'm going to cut it off right here. There's a lot in this report, and you should really go and digest what you can of it. I gave you the key points, some of the cliff notes, if you will, of each section. But each section is considerably longer. If you go onto the link that I'm going to post, you'll get the brief version from them that I basically read off of and inserted my own little comments here or there. But you'll also have links in there where you can go to the full section in the full report. Click on those links. There's some good reading in there. You know, I read through it. So it's a lot of good information in there. And again, at the end, there's a frequently asked question, the FAQ section. Definitely read through that. That contains a lot of good information as well, regardless of which side of the debate you're on. So, you know, and again, regardless of which side of the debate you're on, you should take the time to educate yourself on all of the literature available so that you can be more informed however you choose to feel. But that's been the show. I thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Leave a comment wherever you want to leave a comment, preferably on the Freedom Train website. That, you know, I will see it if you leave it in the lessons from the screen area of the Freedom Train website. If you leave it somewhere else, there's a good chance I might not, because I'm not on social media the way my partner in crime, Joe, would probably like me to be, or the way several other people would probably like me to be. But, you know, it is what it is, baby, and that's what it's going to be. Thank you for listening to me. I check you out. Check us out next time on the next episode.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them. Yeah. lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
I want to thank you guys once again for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen. I also want to encourage you guys to head over to the website, www.freedomtrainnetwork.com. You can head over there to the website, gain access to all of the shows on the Freedom Train Network, including this one. You can access to old shows, new shows. You should also check out the Freedom Train app. You can find it in the Google Play Store. If you research Google Play or research Freedom Train Radio or Freedom Train Presents the Freedom Train Network, you'll find the app there and you'll see the Choo Choo Train. That is our trademark Choo Choo Train for the Freedom Train. You can get all of the shows right there on your cell phone. Notification whenever we drop anything, or maybe we just want to see the notification saying hi. So you should definitely go and get that app. And you should also take a listen to our live internet radio streams throughout the weekend. We're dropping lectures, we're dropping shows, we're dropping all kinds of interesting things on the weekends. So definitely take advantage of that. I want to thank you guys again for supporting us. And as always, we appreciate you. We will see you next week. This is Freedom Train Network Presents Lessons from the Screen.